Good morning. My name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. This morning's guest on With Respect is Kimberly Jorgensen Gain. Kimberly is a native of this area, but has taken on a special, interesting program called Listen to Your Mother. Oh, my God. All right, I'm not sure we can do that. But we're going to hear about her defending this issue. Kimberly Jorgensen Gain, With Respect. Kim, how are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good. All right. Fine. First of all, first question everybody gets is, where are you from originally?
St. Joseph, Michigan.
All right. And you've got a Jorgensen name, and I think that's familiar to
infamous,
us all.
Yes, I know.
Infamous. And that, your brother is?
My dad.
Your dad is?
Pete Jorgensen.
Pete is a real estate fellow.
Pete Jorgensen, real estate.
That's right. And full disclosure, your aunt, his sister, was my administrative assistant in Berrien County Prosecutor's Office. So
Many years ago, well before
you were born. So, tell me about your life. Where did you go to school? How about that?
I graduated in 1984 from St. Joseph High School,
mm-hmm.
almost kind of barely.
Oh, we'll get to that. This is good. I'm already sympathetic with you.
Okay, good. Thank you. Well, and you turned out okay.
I did, all right.
Soon after that, I thought I was going to go to move to Kalamazoo and go to college and all that stuff, and that really never panned out. I had a child mm-hmm. all by myself mm-hmm. at 20 years old, moved back home with my tail between my legs and to this very conservative, you know, mm-hmm. Midwestern town, community area. And, it was a struggle for a lot of years. Fast forward to now, I am going to be 50 years old this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had many Erica Kane-worthy iterations in between, and I kind of am finally finding my groove.
This is good.
Yeah, very good.
What about in high school? I mean, you're like many of us that barely scraped through high school. I had my problems in grammar school, with the alphabet, but... But my question, what were you interested in when you were in high school?
Music. I was a singer. Mm-hmm. I still am a singer. I had Dennis Bowen for mm-hmm. 4 hours my senior year, which is probably why
wow.
I was not exactly on the college path.
Uh-huh.
I took music theory. I was his school service for freshman choir, which basically I was his runner and his secretary and mm-hmm. all of that. I was president of concert choir. And then for lunch, I was in show choir. So I spent a large part of my senior year of high school with Mr. Bowen.
All right.
Which was wonderful. He remains one of my favorite people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I participated in Encore, which was the... anniversary.
Reunion.
Yes,
yeah.
It was the reunion for Showtime, St. Joseph High School's variety show.
So everybody understands, that's right. It was a variety show that St. Joe High School puts on every year.
Yeah.
And this Showtime was a reunion.
Encore.
It was a reunion of that program.
It was,
people from who had been there decades ago came in.
Yeah, yep. And it was one of the most wonderful experiences. I actually opened the show
mm-hmm.
To a video montage of Mr. Brown and Betty Tyson and, these people who had been such a huge part of Showtime for so many years. And it was extremely emotional. It was really hard. Friday night went fine. Saturday night, however, the whole cast, everyone who had come from all over, you know, people had flown there to do this show and to, mm-hmm. Be there for rehearsals the week of the show. It was a huge deal. And we're in the choir room, and Robert Brown, who had been the marching band director at St. Joseph High School for years and years and years, his daughters, and he's passed, his daughters were in the choir room with us before the show. So it was extremely emotional, and it was, everybody is boo-hooing, and so it was really, so then I had to go be the first one to go sing on stage, and I think Mr. Bowen struggled with it as much as I did. I think he had a hard time seeing. I think we both had tears in our eyes, and so it was a little, the piano playing. He was playing piano for me, which was so touching and wonderful. So I set myself up for a little too much emotion.
Well, crying, when people cry, that tends to constrict the vocal cords.
It does. It's really hard to sing when you cry. And fair warning, I probably will get a little choked up at some point during this interview. So,
all right, that's fair. I like distant early warnings about that. Well, I have Kleenex here somewhere.
Okay, good.
But anyhow.
Sleeves. There's always sleeves.
Okay, there you go. So that's what music was your big thing.
Yeah, I had the lead. My senior year, we did The King and I, and mm-hmm. I played Anna, opposite Jeff Hoover's King of Siam, which was a trip. So we've remained good friends too. He was in Encore also, so it's a lot of fun.
So what about music and all this really turns you on? Why? What's
the deal? I think the bottom line is, and I think I sang my first solo when I was 5 years old in church. Mm-hmm. And I remember the power that came along with that. I remember, I don't remember feeling nervous. My mom made me this crunchy velvet skirt, long skirt with red pom-pom fringe. I can remember it so distinctly. Mm-hmm. I remember wearing a big red bow in my hair. My hair was in what I used to call a Shelley Ritter ponytail, which is a half up with the big bow. And this is how I wore my hair most of the time when I was little. And I just remember the power of singing, all by myself on that stage and having all eyes on me. And then, of course, afterwards, all the attention and all the, wow, I can't believe you did that. And, oh, you did such a beautiful job and making my family proud. And, so there was, that was certainly the beginning of it, but storytelling, and music and writing really go hand in hand. So I think the bottom line is storytelling. I think I have been a storyteller my whole life. Friends, who used to drive me around when I was a kid because I was best friends with their granddaughter, actually. They've told me that I would stand up on, remember the old cars that had the hump in the back seat?
Yeah, yeah.
In the middle of the back seat. We didn't wear seat belts, so I would stand, and I was quite petite, so I would stand over that hump in the middle of the back seat, leaning over the front seat, telling stories and singing songs to these people. So I just think that has been just a part of who I am and who I've always been, and I don't sing all the time anymore. It's rare occasions really now. Mm-hmm. Although Encore is coming back and I am going to audition. Now we have to audition this time because it has gotten
so popular
yeah. and so many people want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So I have a couple pieces that I'm going to try out with.
Yeah. I've got to tell you a story. When I was 7 or 8 in second grade, they had a school musical, and part of it, every class put on something, and all I remember is that I was taller than most of the kids in the class. In fact, it turns out that I was the tallest boy in the class.
I had the opposite
by a quarter
problem.
Inch. Well, I was by a quarter inch over Kurt Spangler. All right. So that meant that I could play Uncle Sam in our version of the George M. Cohan's "I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy,"
oh, wow.
And so I sang "Grand Old Flag," "Yankee Doodle Dandy," and something else. But I remember being in this Uncle Sam outfit.
Sure.
And I sang this. I was the lead singer, and I didn't have any problem with it. I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
That was the last time that I did a solo in front of a crowd where I wasn't petrified.
Wow.
Because many years later, I was in a college musical in which I played Addo Annie's father in Oklahoma.
Oh, my goodness.
And I sang some kind of a solo in front of 300 of my fellow students, which, you know, you're up there, the lights are blinding you.
See, yep.
It's just black out there. You're
yeah.
singing to blackness.
Yep.
If I could have seen them, it would have been better, I suppose. But I had to get up there and sing. It was the most embarrassing thing.
Oh, dear.
And I sing a lot. I mean,
yeah.
Drives my daughter crazy and my dog who cannot stand listening to my singing, but I sing a lot. And this particular night, I was so terrified that I was going to blow it.
Yeah.
Because there was an orchestra and everything, that I vowed never to do it again. And so
oh,
now
my goodness.
I sing in choirs.
Yeah.
Or I sing wherever I can find somebody who won't listen to me. That's how I torture them. But but at any rate, but never again for solos. No,
wow.
No. In groups is fine, where I can blend in and
yeah,
no
yeah.
one can hear, you know, my missing tones or whatever. But at any rate, so you love singing.
Yeah.
You love music.
Yeah.
What did you do with it?
Absolutely nothing for many years.
All right.
I became a single mom at mm-hmm. 20 years old. And, you know, that life struggle is something that consumes you. Being a mom, certainly, you know, starting so young, I've been a mom mm-hmm. for 29 years, mm-hmm. you know, at this point. There's
boy, girl?
I had a girl, a mm-hmm. little girl. My oldest is 29.
Mm-hmm.
She is married now, lives down in Chattanooga, Tennessee with her husband. They just built a house. She, this is when it's going to get me.
Okay, that's
when
fine.
When I talk about my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
That's all right.
She graduated from Purdue University.
Mm-hmm.
With my husband's help, thankfully.
Good, good.
My husband adopted her. I think she was 11 by the time that we met when the girls were 3 and 5. Our daughters are 2 years apart, and they share the same birthday.
Wow.
I know.
That's
very
convenient.
Strange.
Now
it
that
is
convenient.
It
oh,
is.
I went through life with my brother bemoaning the fact that I had my birthday in June.
Oh, a summer birthday.
And he had his birthday in November, so close to Christmas
right.
that no one really wanted to flood him with gifts.
Right.
Oh, we'll just give him something now, and the big gifts come. He said that was his, he was tortured by
yes,
this.
Yes,
the
bane
says.
Of his existence.
Oh, yeah, the bane of his poor guy.
Oh, yes.
But at any rate, it turned him into quite a successful person, this torment, this
yes,
inner
exactly.
torment. But at any rate, so you have the two daughters.
Yep, two grown daughters.
And they are on the same day. That's great.
I know.
That
yeah.
is great. What about your husband? Tell me about him.
My husband is a former first responder. He was first of all, he was an Eagle Scout. He is like the original, he is like the classic Boy Scout person. He
mm-hmm.
was an Eagle Scout. He was the youngest Eagle Scout in the nation, or youngest to make Eagle Scout in the nation in his time. He was a firefighter, paramedic, police officer in Kalamazoo. And our paths kind of crossed back in the day when
mm-hmm.
he was a cop. He dated a good friend of mine.
And he arrested you, right?
No, that would be a great story, though, wouldn't it? He did not, thankfully.
Okay.
He was dating a friend of mine. I was dating a friend of his who he played softball with. And I can remember two occasions meeting him. One occasion, he was in Wayside West, which exists no more. It's closed now in
mm-hmm.
Kalamazoo. And he and the guy that I was dating had just gotten done playing softball, and they were all sweaty and, you know, skinned
yucky.
Up knees.
Yucky.
Yucky.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But I can distinctly remember meeting him. And then years later, he was a single dad, divorced. I was still a single mom. And a friend, he had dated a friend who I went to high school with, her sister. Mm-hmm. And she calls me out of the blue. You know, we hadn't really stayed in touch, but we were still friendly. And she calls me out of the blue and she said, "Are you still single?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, there's this guy, and he was dating my sister, and she's not really into the whole instant family thing. And you guys both have little girls. I just think you should meet."
Mm-hmm.
So we were set up on a blind date.
All right.
And I walk into Southtown Twin Theaters with not a penny in my pocket, but I knew the manager, and I knew she would take a check from me if I had to do it. So I walk up to the desk like, "I'm going to buy my ticket."
Yeah.
And he's standing there, and he holds up two tickets. And he looked familiar instantly. So immediately we started talking about how could we possibly know one another, and, you know, made the connection that it was Kalamazoo and that it was whoa. And, you know, we wouldn't have liked each other back then.
Yeah.
I don't think we would have had anything really to connect us or anything in common. I was, you know, goofy. I was. Yeah,
well, at whatever age, at many ages, we're all goofy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to take a break right now. We're talking to Kim Jorgensen-Gain, who is going to talk to us about a program called Listen to Your Mother. Now, this is scary. This is scary, and I've been delaying getting into this, but this is going to be a good story, I'm sure. But at any rate, this is With Respect. My name is John Smetanka, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kimberly Jorgensen-Gain, who is pushing a program which I think has a fascinating title called Listen to Your Mother.
Yep.
And we're going to see what it's about and what kind of effects it has. But it's always a good thing. My brother keeps saying, "Remember what your mother said."
Yeah.
This is John Smetanka, and we're on With Respect. So, Kim, you met this guy, you spurned him because he was sweaty and probably ugly and everything, and then later you meet him and you get married and live happily ever after, right?
Yeah, well.
All right. So, tell me about where you got this idea about listen to your mother.
Well, you know, having been a mom since I was 20 years old, mm-hmm. and my motherhood experience starting with a lot of struggle, I didn't get any child support. I got a lot of support from family, and I was very, very lucky. I recognize that. Very, very lucky to have that. There are a lot of single moms in this world who have no support. They have no education. They have no opportunity. I went to an extremely good public school. I didn't have any college. Well, a semester, but that doesn't really count.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any college, but I went to a really good public school in St. Joseph Public Schools. And I was really, really fortunate that, you know, communication, and this ties in. It's all mm-hmm. It all goes with the storytelling thing. Communication, I think, is the bottom line of everything. It is the most important thing that we can teach our kids. It is the most important thing that we can nurture in our children, is an ability to communicate, a willingness to communicate, and some skill, you know, in that department. And I think I just was really, really lucky to have that background that I had. You know, my grandmother was a choir director in church growing up. This is why, you know, I was mm-hmm. very much nurtured and encouraged to sing. My dad, you know, being in real estate, but he wasn't always, you know, he was in manufacturing before that.
Mm-hmm.
I was really lucky to be surrounded by people who talked a lot, quite frankly. talking was never anything that I shied away from. Communicating was never anything that I shied away from. And the ability to turn that, even though I really never did a lick of homework, I actually got an F in 7th grade English because I never handed in my final draft of my mythology report, my Greek mythology report. I still owe Mrs. Lancelot a Greek mythology report from 7th grade. But I was good at it. I was good at writing, and I was good at communicating, whether it was through song or through writing. You know, I was good at it, and that just is such an important factor in life, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. is to be able to communicate. It doesn't matter if you're an accountant. Mm-hmm. You still have to have that ability to communicate. So I what was the question?
Well, let me move to a different issue.
How did I get involved with Listen to Your Mother from there?
That's what it was.
So, as a single mom, years later, I have a little boy also who was born when my girls were 16 and 14.
Okay.
That spread was not intentional by any means. Mm-hmm. I struggled with 6 years of infertility. My husband and I did. And finally, when our son came along, my girls were 16 and 14. They were teenagers in high school. And I was a stay-at-home mom after, you know, working really my daughter's whole life. You know, I was a working mom, a single working mom, and then a married working mom for years. And from being a single mom and then being a stay-at-home mom, these are two areas where you're really invisible. Mm. You know, you're really invisible in society. You feel invisible to your family because you're just there every day. And it's like your whole life is consumed by little people.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, not so little people. But
mm-hmm.
So, you know, as a person yourself, you really, really lose yourself. You really lose your identity, and you lose your passion for life other than your own children, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm not saying this is the case for everyone, and I am by no means dismissing stay-at-home moms because, my God, their job is the hardest on the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it truly is. And as moms, it is our responsibility to set everything else aside and to raise good little people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was proud to do that. And certainly after trying for 6 years and my son finally, you know, coming into this world, you know, this was huge and it was so important. And we struggled. My son has food allergies, food issues,
mm-hmm.
Gluten intolerant. And so raising him was not an easy task. It, mm-hmm. You know, after raising these two girls,
mm-hmm.
you know, who were completely conventional kids. They ate crap macaroni and cheese, the frozen pizzas, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I mean, you know,
it was normal.
It was easy. It was easy. You know, they went to the pediatrician. You know, we did everything as recommended, but you know, by the pediatrician. Well, fast forward 16 years later, and my son, I had to learn how to parent all over again. His
yeah.
needs were very, very different from my daughter's needs.
Yeah.
And not just that he's a boy, but that our society is just so different
Amen.
Now.
Amen.
So it took a lot of, his needs consumed my life in such a way because it was not just having a new baby with teenagers in the house, which I wrote a piece called Fear Factor is Having an Infant with Teenagers in Your House, which is very true. Not only, you know, was my life consumed with a newborn, but it was consumed with trying to figure out how to keep this newborn happy. He was kind of a malcontent baby.
Mm-hmm.
Not in his first 2 months, but later
yeah.
So, you know, it just was a struggle. And when my son was, my husband traveled a lot for work. He mm-hmm. is, he's a corporate security consultant. And so he traveled a great deal, you know, all around the country for work. And so I was home alone with the kids quite a lot. So
Back to being a single mom,
exactly. And there are flashbacks, man. There are flashbacks that happen. So that you know, it wasn't easy. I don't know if it's by choice or by circumstance, but motherhood has never just been easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in the middle of that, being a stepmom too, you know, that's not easy.
That's hard. That's hard enough.
Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting. You track this along, and it has so many different modifications in different people's situation. A friend of mine, he and his wife had a daughter and a son, mm-hmm. and they were professional people, and coasting along. In fact, the my friend was a high-ranking government official. And he worked hard, and he did a great job, and he was honest, and at any rate, he came along to a point where the kids graduated from college, and he and his wife, Jackie, had planned. They lived in a beautiful part of the country, and they were ready now for retirement, and their daughter came home pregnant.
Oh.
No husband, no guy.
Been there.
Been there, all right? Well, they had a choice. They had some choices. And the choices that they faced were the same that anybody would face in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
The family and the mother, this young girl, chose that she would have the child who turned out to be twins.
Oh, my goodness.
Twins. And that grandma and grandpa were going to be the surrogate parents during the week, and on the weekends and the vacations, mom, who was in law school at the time, would come home and be a mom.
Wow.
And so this relationship worked. It worked.
Wow.
And this young woman graduated from law school, became a lawyer, married a wonderful guy, and they're just doing really well. But my friend and his wife, all of a sudden, were faced with, after raising two, now they've got two babies, and they are parents again.
Wow.
And so they had to make a lot of adjustments.
Yeah.
And things turned out well, for those little kids and for their mom and for their stepfather and for the grandparents as well.
Mm.
But it was not easy.
Right.
Not easy.
Not easy.
No retirement.
Right.
It's all over.
Yeah.
It's back to the, you know, back to the future or
future
to the past, whatever.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, so this situation has obviously educated you.
Yeah.
It's framed your way of thinking. It has framed your storytelling.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Now what?
Well, we moved to San Diego for work for my mm-hmm. husband, and I did not want to move mm-hmm. to San Diego. Mm-hmm. I was kicking and screaming the whole way. We hauled a 30-foot travel trailer on the way out. Took like 10 days. Camped our way out to San Diego, which, you know, was really wonderful in some ways. If only it wasn't for the fact that I was going to be stuck out there, I thought, at the time, forever.
Yeah.
But now, you know, here I am.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Obviously that wasn't the case. But so in San Diego, my son and I both struggle with transition. Transition is particularly difficult for him. So transition, you know, this move, I mean, they're, you know, almost 2,000 miles. We blew three tires on the travel trailer on the way out there. So this transition was very, very difficult for my son and I. And my husband had this big, huge job. He was working for a defense contractor, and his job consumed him. And I'm this short, little, chubby, Midwestern, older mom. Because
mm-hmm.
I, you know, when I had my son, I was advanced maternal age
mm-hmm.
at 36.
Mm-hmm.
So I was this older mom landing in San Diego, Midwesterner, chubby, around all these Barbie dolls. And, you know, young moms and moms that, you know, their life was Starbucks and working out when their kids were in school. And that's not entirely fair because over time, I met women and I learned, you know, there was so much more to them than that. But that's what it felt like,
mm-hmm.
you know, at first. I really felt like I had landed in a foreign country. And the first year, I was miserable. I didn't like myself very much. I was bitter and angry. I didn't want to be there. I had left this posse of women. You know, I had these five close friends, and left this posse of women that I had at home to go out to San Diego and have no support. And no support system, no grandparents to watch the kids, no girlfriends to hang out with, no playgroups, you know, none of that. So after the first year, I had talked myself into San Diego was going to be okay. San Diego was going to be okay. San Diego was really going to be okay.
Whether you like it or not, it's going to be fine.
Yeah. By telling myself, well, there's all those colleges. This is my chance. I'll go to school. I will, you know. Well, the first year I didn't do that. I was depressed. I was just consumed in this misery of being stuck there. But the second year, I started taking creative writing classes at UCSD.
We're gonna stop. We are on the rebound upwards. We're going to stop for just a minute and come back to this. But we're on With Respect with Kimberly Jorgensen-Gain, who is the sponsor, the head person for a program called Listen to Your Mother. And we found out that she's got a lot of experience as a mother and as a stepmother and single mother-in-law, all this mothering stuff.
I'm every mom.
And all right, this is John Smetanka, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kimberly Jorgensen-Gain, who is a sponsor here in Western Michigan for a program which is actually nationwide, we're going to find out about, which is called Listen to Your Mother. This is John Smetanka. When we left Kimberly, you were telling us that finally something started to turn around.
Yeah.
And what was that?
I started taking creative writing classes at UCSD, at the UCSD Adult Extension in San Diego. And it made me feel human again, you know, being creative again. I started blogging. Listen to Your Mother is very much born in blogging. And so I didn't know about Listen to Your Mother yet in San Diego, but I had written a couple of political pieces that got some kind of good traction on BlogHer. And BlogHer is a women's social media platform. And so it's a place where you can, your blog can live on your own blog, which mine is at Gane, G-A-N-E, possible.com. So your blog can live on your own blog, but then you can cross-post it onto this BlogHer so that you can get more readership. And it doesn't affect your analytics or anything like that, because Google appreciates that BlogHer kind of, I guess, puts a rubber stamp on what you've written. So you actually get traffic from that cross-posting. So I had written a couple of political pieces because this was before a presidential season, much like where we are now. And I had like 5,000 hits on one of the stories that I wrote. It was called My Friends Think I'm the Only Liberal They Know. I Don't Know What I Am. and it was very much about the fact that when I was home in Southwest Michigan, I felt like the only liberal in the room.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in San Diego, I felt like the only conservative in the room. So it was that, you know, I'm like the enlightened middle mom, you know? Mm-hmm. It was like I felt I was very much torn between, you know, these two pieces of myself. So that revelation of how it felt, you know, when you move away from the place where you were born and raised and your whole family lives and you're, you know, it expands your worldview in crazy ways. So that happened, you know, I had that experience of the world is really different. You know, the Midwest and the West Coast are really different.
Let me break in there because I dated a woman many years ago who is from California, and the first thing she told me was, John, I just want to tell you that I'm a California girl. I said, okay, that means you sing the Beach Boys. And she said, no. What that means is that we don't make lasting commitments.
Oh.
I said, that hurts. Wow. But at any rate, she told me an interesting story, and that is she was raised in California, and when she came to the Midwest to go to school, which is how I met her, her friends told her, are you crazy? Why would you go back to the Midwest? I mean, there's nothing there. They're all corn-fed pigs or cows out there or steers or whatever it is. And there's no culture, there's no life, and, you know. And something she told me, which is interesting, she said, you know, that's the attitude I had when I came to the Midwest. What I found, however, was that Midwesterners are wonderful people. That is, they form deep relationships and friendships that last.
Yeah.
And they're not just, you know, flip here, flip there, flip my hair, flip my eyes, and, you know, move on.
Right.
But rather, they for better or worse, you know, you're a part of a community.
Yeah.
And people know who you are, know who your parents were. One of the complaints my daughter once had was, Dad, I can't go anywhere that people don't know you or Mom.
Yes.
It's just I have no privacy.
Oh, I feel your daughter's pain.
But at any rate, so this flows into Listen to Your Mom.
Yeah.
And first of all, describe what Listen to Your Mom is.
So Listen to Your Mother is a live stage show. It's part live stage show, part social media movement. So because I started blogging in San Diego, because I had, you know, a little bit of really encouragement, you know, that traction that I got, you know, on that piece, you know, that was, hey, I can turn a word, you know. That encouraged me. You know, my instructors at UCSD very much encouraged me, the professors there. And I took two classes there. I took one in the fall, and then the next I signed up again in the spring. And the professor, his wife was his assistant, and I walk in the first day of the spring semester class, and she said, look at you. You have just you're not the same person you were last semester. You've just blossomed. And her husband didn't even recognize me, that I had been in their class, you know, this semester before. And it was all because of blogging. It was because I had stepped on a stage, a virtual stage at that point, and put my words out there. You know, after being a single mom and being invisible, after being a stay-at-home mom and being invisible, I had stuff to say, you know? Mm-hmm. And being a little girl who grew up singing solos in church, and later, you know, I was Anna in The King and I, you know, in high school, to be invisible is not part of my DNA. So to share my thoughts and my words and to get a little bit of feedback that, hey, I wasn't crazy, honestly, that was the bottom line. You know, as a writer who isn't writing, I felt like a crazy person. I felt like they're, you know, those stories, if you're not writing those stories down, they're going through your head.
That's right.
So the act of keeping all of that to myself and never writing it down, never giving myself the time to write things down, I was making myself a crazy person. And so blogging was very much an outlet for me. So, which is why mommy bloggers are so prevalent. This is why mommy blogging has, you know, and I hate that term, mommy blogger, because there's so much more to it than that. There is so much more depth to these women, to these mothers, than just being mommy bloggers. You know, yeah, there's the coupon ones, and yeah, there's the those ones that have ads on their sites, and they're just writing for clicks. But there is so much substance to these women out there, and so much struggle that we share.
Well, now, but somewhere in there, this Listen to Your Mother comes in.
Yep.
And that's what I'm kind of focused
on.
Yeah.
So I auditioned. I had written a piece called What If I'd Said Just Drive. And it was about being suicidal as a young single mom. And again, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. So that didn't happen. But I had written this piece and posted it on my blog. And somewhere in the blogosphere, I became conscious of Listen to Your Mother, because it started, Listen to Your Mother started in 2010 in Madison, Wisconsin with one show. And the woman, who our founder, is Ann Immig, and she, her blog is called Ann's Rants, and she's a stay-at-home humorist is what she calls herself, and she was looking for a place to share her stories with people, with human beings, face-to-face, mm-hmm. a live place to share her stories. And so she created this show. She invited other bloggers that she knew to audition with pieces that were specifically about motherhood. So it started with one show in 2010 in Madison, Wisconsin. And because of blogging, because of her contacts in the blogosphere, she had the forethought to videotape those stories and share those stories on YouTube. So this storytelling platform, this live storytelling platform, grew through social media. And this year, it's in 41 cities across the U.S. and one in Canada, and Vancouver, Canada is having a show this year. I auditioned with my piece, What If I'd Said Just Drive, for the Northwest Indiana show in 2014, because at the time, that was the closest show to me. I thought, there's one in Chicago. This is Chicago's fifth year doing it. In 2014, there was a show in Northwest Indiana. They're taking a break this year. So Southwest Michigan is it, people.
Mm-hmm. But all right, but are you saying that that people get on and blog, or is there something else? Or if I were to go, and I know that you have a program on the 29th of April,
yep.
At St. Joseph High School. Am I going to go there and just see computers talking to each other?
No.
What is it?
So Listen to Your Mother is about giving motherhood a microphone. So, you know, just like I'm sitting here talking with you, talking mm-hmm. into a microphone, not just bloggers. It has grown. There are almost 1,500 videos of individual stories on the Listen to Your Mother YouTube channel. Because of the way that it has spread since 2010. Mm-hmm. Last year, we were in 39 cities across the U.S., so we've grown by a couple of cities this year. So you stand on the stage and you read your story. So anybody can do it. Anybody who is just a natural storyteller. Mm-hmm. Anybody. And so it's to celebrate motherhood and Mother's Day. That's what our stories are for.
All right. We have books which are predicated on Listen to Your Mother's momisms.
Yes.
We also have dadisms.
Yes. And there's a Listen to Your Mother book.
Ah, but the momisms, little short vignettes, one line, you know, always wear clean underwear,
yeah.
Always, you know, brush your teeth. All of those things are not what you're talking about.
No, this is very much storytelling.
I used to give talks, I still do, but not as often. But if I ran into a problem where I wasn't connecting with an audience, I would say, okay, how many of the people here in this audience have children?
Right.
And well, most of the people would raise their hand because they're all older. And I'd say, all right, how many of you wonder if your children, especially your sons, because that's what I was the son, and if anything that you say sticks, has any permanence
right.
in their heads.
Right.
And I said, I'm here to tell you that no man-child in the history of the world, including Jesus Christ, has forgotten his mother. In fact, they all live inside their heads rent-free
yes.
their whole life.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
So, and it's not just advice. It's all the accumulated experiences that a mother brings into
yeah.
mothering,
yeah.
which, you know, I call it the zigs and zags of life.
Yeah.
You don't just go in a direct line to something.
Right.
Most of, you know, we've done four or 500 shows, and I think I've seen four people who have gone from age 6 to age 50 on a straight line.
Right.
Everybody else zigs and zags.
Oh, yeah.
You zig
and
zag.
Oh, I've zigged and zagged a lot.
And that, I'm convinced, makes us interesting people.
Yeah.
And makes being a mother a very interesting profession.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And it provides the basis for providing a basis inside of their children.
Yeah.
The platform for the next generation, for their lives.
Yeah.
So.
And it goes back to that communication thing.
Yeah.
You know, mothers are, we teach our children how to communicate from actually in the womb, really.
Mm-hmm.
They hear our voices, you know. Mm-hmm. So yes, that communication and, you know, sharing our stories, sharing that struggle of motherhood, and it isn't just moms who tell these stories by any means. We have an incredible, incredible story from a man who had 22 mothers because he was in the foster care system.
Mm.
And his story is just unbelievable, and I can't wait for him to tell it. This show really has informed, has been informed by the fact that my husband and I took guardianship of our nephew last summer. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. His mom died when he was 7. My nephew and my son are the same age. They're both, my son will be 13 in a couple weeks. My nephew just turned 13 in January. I wish that we would have had him right then. But that's not the way life worked.
Life doesn't work that way.
No, that linear thing, that didn't mm-hmm. happen so much. So last summer it was time. My husband lost both of his parents in 2014, between August and December of 2014. His parents had been our nephew's primary caretakers, but they had never done anything legally.
Mm-hmm.
So when they passed, he tried moving back in with his dad. That didn't work out so well. He ended up on his brother's couch. His brother's in college. Mm-hmm. So, you know, mm-hmm. Good young man. I know his brother will be a lasting influence in his life, but a college kid should not raise a brother.
No, that's right. That's right. Not a 7-year-old.
No.
We're going to take another break right now. We're talking to Kimberly Jorgensen Gain, who is a sponsor and kind of organizer for Listen to Your Mother, which is a program which is going to be on at St. Joseph High School, 7 o'clock on April 29th of this year. And I'm sure you're inviting anybody who wants
Please.
To talk about or hear about what mothers meant to their kids.
Yeah.
So we're talking, as I say, to Kimberly Gain. This is John Smetanka, and we'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Kimberly Jorgensen Gain, who is a sponsor, one of two. We're going to talk about your co-presenter as well, of the program Listen to Your Mother, April 29th at 7 p.m., St. Joseph High School. This is John Smetanka. All right, Kim, your partner in this
My partner in crime.
Is who?
Beth Hare Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Beth is chair of the Coming Home, Coming Together concert, the annual Coming Home, Coming Together concert, which celebrates her father, Gene Harris, who was a local jazz legend.
Mm-hmm.
He played with Ray Charles. The man was in the business.
That's right.
And Beth is one of his daughters, and he has passed, and so they annually in Benton Harbor, they hold this Coming Home, Coming Together concert. And I really didn't know Beth well. My dad knew her a lot better than I did, but I knew what she did, and I knew that this Coming Home, Coming Together thing was something that I really wanted to create in mm-hmm. bringing Listen to Your Mother to Southwest Michigan. So this was informed by us having had a restaurant in Benton Harbor, you know, 15 plus years ago. And Benton Harbor sticks in your craw, you know. when you get to know the people and you contribute to the community and you learn about the actual human beings, you know, that live there and work there and raise their families there, it sticks in you. And it's not anything that I could walk away from and forget that mm-hmm. I had a business in Benton Harbor for, you know, a period of time. And that the segregation that we experience in St. Joseph and Benton Harbor mm-hmm. is something that growing up always mystified me. I didn't really understand it, and I didn't like it so much. Mm-hmm. I guess being a storyteller and having an interest in human beings, you know, of all walks of life, that was something that I found fascinating when we had our restaurant, was getting to know all kinds of people, our employees and our customers and the vendors and, you know, everybody.
What was the name of your restaurant?
It was the Main Street Cafe, and it was on Main Street in Benton Harbor, the big food sign.
Yep, sure,
that was
sure.
our restaurant. And so even though our restaurant didn't last very long, we were open for 3 years after 9/11, you know, everything changed. Especially, I think there are a lot of industries that were really affected by that. Obviously, the home building industry, mm-hmm. you know, is just another example. But the restaurant industry, it was immediate. It was everybody, like, got up from the table, threw down their napkins, and went home. Everybody wanted to eat at home. Everybody wanted to keep their families close. And some neat things grew out of that, you know, locavore and food to table and all that has really grown out of our desire to go back to the family dining table.
Mm-hmm.
But it sealed the doom, you know, of our mm-hmm. restaurant.
Sure.
Very finitely. Our season ended. Our summer season ended September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't come back.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And so, you know.
I would tell you, I'm going to break in for just a second. I gave a talk in 1976 to the Benton Harbor St. Joe Rotary Club.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in my long career as prosecutor of 2 years, I was tired of talking about crime. And so I gave a talk which was on the future of Berrien County. And I talked about the three challenges that we had in Berrien County. If we didn't solve those problems, I said, we're going to turn into go downhill. And the three challenges, the first one was North County, South County. The antagonism between the two was pretty useless. The second one was the fight between, the tension between Benton Harbor and St. Joe, which had nothing originally to do with race.
Mm.
It was traditional going back to the founding of the two communities back in the 1800s. But the last one was a matter of race.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't, I said, bridge those three gaps, then we're going to turn into a sad backwater.
Yeah.
At any rate, I said, the people in the city of Benton Harbor and the people in the city of St. Joe, and by that I mean everybody that in the surrounding areas, I said, there's a problem. The problem is that the people in Benton Harbor harbor a view that the people in St. Joe are trying to keep them down,
mm-hmm.
put a foot on their throat.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that over and over, that same image over and over again. And the people in St. Joe think that, well, I can get along. Benton Harbor's irrelevant. I don't need to be over there. And
right.
I said you're both crazy.
Yeah.
It's worse than that. It's far worse than that. And the problem is that the people in the city of St. Joe think that they can do without dealing with the city of St. Joe. This is now 76, mm-hmm. people of Benton Harbor. And I said, everywhere I go in the country or everywhere I go in the state, people always say, when I tell them where I'm from, they say, mm-hmm. oh, Benton Harbor, St. Joe, or St. Joe, Benton Harbor.
Right.
They're wedded together.
We're the Twin Cities.
They're the Twin Cities, yeah. For better or worse.
Right.
You don't have any choice.
Right.
And the second, on the other side of the river, I said, it's worse. It's worse than they don't like you. They're not conspiring against you. You're irrelevant.
Yeah.
They don't care about you.
Yeah.
Now, this was true back in the 70s, and I used the image that this is that the Rust Belt, we became the Rust Belt back in the 70s, and that's people were going to the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
All right? So after the speech was over, questions came up. Any questions? Yes. Mr. Smetanka, when are we going to have a prosecution in the Jones killing? Okay, blah, blah, blah. Mr. Smetanka, what are we going to do about the burglary gang in Baroda? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Not one question about what I said.
Wow.
Fellow came up, a prominent person came up to me after the speech and said, Johnny, you know, you're wrong. And I said, really? I'm wrong? About what? And he said, air conditioning. I said, air conditioning? Just how you mean this? And this is just like out of The Graduate, you know, plastics.
Huh.
What do you mean, air conditioning? And he said, that's why we're losing jobs to the South, is because of air conditioning. And I thought, that's no. The reason we're losing jobs is because of that attitude. So at any rate, the point I make is that perceptions mm-hmm. in the St. Joe Benton Harbor area are as important as the realities.
Yeah.
Or maybe even more.
Yeah.
And what's in people's heads. And so to cure the problems, whether it's in a family, and there can be all kinds of misperceptions in a family. That's
sure.
why families break up.
Right.
Is because often because he doesn't understand me.
Right.
She doesn't understand me.
Right.
And in fact, that's correct.
Yeah.
They're both
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, it's not being heard. It's feeling
not being
like
heard.
You're not heard and you're not recognized.
Now we come back to communication.
Exactly.
So now tying this all back together in
yes.
a bow.
Yes.
Your program is about Benton Harbor, St. Joe, communicating on the basest level
of motherhood.
Of motherhood.
Yeah. Yeah. Beth Hare Lewis is my co-director. I'm producer and we're co-directors of Listen to Your Mother. And we had to pitch national Listen to Your Mother in order to bring the show to our community. We have a 70-page manual that we call him fondly Emmanuel that guides us and teaches us how to produce a similar show in each city. And Listen to Your Mother, you know, because it was born in mommy blogging, which is largely affluent white women, because those are mostly the stay-at-home moms,
mm-hmm.
they have, in recognizing that was the material that they had came largely from affluent white women and that is one specific story. They had a real push and a real desire to reach out and with more diversity and inclusion. And so we have a diversity and inclusion mentor on the national staff who helps guide us and helps, you know, bring that into each of our shows. So for me to pitch Benton Harbor and St. Joe, that was what I wanted to do in the beginning. So when I stepped on that stage in Northwest Indiana, I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew in that moment that I wanted to bring the show to my community. And I wanted to do that as a bonding mechanism for Benton Harbor and St. Joe.
So in one sentence, what is it if I go to that program on 7 o'clock April 29th, St. Joseph High School. Give me one sentence as to what I'm going to see.
You are going to see all aspects of motherhood represented on a stage and through story. It's humorous stories. It's heartwarming stories. It's heart-wrenching stories. It is
different
distilling
speakers.
Different speakers. We have 13. I'm one of them, and we have 13 different readers telling stories that we have put together to, you know, each story has to be a complete story on its own,
mm-hmm.
but then the whole show kind of tells a story.
Okay.
So all of these stories kind of relate, you know, in some way. And we have a Hispanic woman, we have African American women, we have an African American gay man, we have white women, we have, you know, just a real representation of our community. And
So we're gonna show up.
Yeah.
And we're gonna
yeah.
have fun.
You're gonna buy tickets first, I hope.
Oh, I knew there was a catch here. All right. Kimberly, thank you very much.
Thank
this
you.
Has been a real pleasure.
Can I give my link for tickets?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so
absolutely.
Go to LTYMSWMI.BPT.me or search Listen to Your Mother Southwest Michigan on brown paper tickets, or just go to the Listen to Your Mother Southwest Michigan website, and you can find a way to buy tickets and
great.
Come to the show.
All right.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to it. This is our program has been with Kimberly Jorgensen-Gain talking about Listen to Your Mother, which is always a good idea for all of us throughout your life. The name of our program is With Respect. We're on every Sunday at 11, every Thursday at 10. And remember, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.